What if everything you've been taught about vulnerability is wrong? We typically view vulnerability as weakness, something to hide or overcome. But Brené Brown's groundbreaking research reveals a stunning paradox. Vulnerability is actually the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity. The moments when we feel most exposed, saying, "I love you" first, initiating sex, admitting a mistake, are precisely when we're most alive. This isn't just feel-good philosophy. It's backed by rigorous research. Our cultural obsession with scarcity, the pervasive feeling that we're never enough, keeps us armored and isolated. We wake up thinking we're not thin enough, smart enough, successful enough. This mindset intensifies through collective traumas, like economic crises or violence, creating a form of cultural PTSD where vulnerability feels dangerous. Yet avoiding vulnerability comes at an enormous cost. We miss the very experiences that bring purpose and meaning to our lives. I don't do vulnerability. How many times have you heard this statement or said it yourself? It's a common shield, especially among professionals. But this fundamentally misunderstands what vulnerability is. Vulnerability isn't a choice, it's our human condition. When we pretend we can avoid it, we're actually just avoiding awareness of it. Have you ever put yourself in a situation where you might be rejected? Have you loved someone who might not love you back? Then you've experienced vulnerability. Another myth is that vulnerability means letting it all hang out, oversharing with anyone who'll listen. True vulnerability happens within relationships where trust has been established. It's not about dumping your life story on strangers, but opening up within relationships where trust has been built in small moments over time. Perhaps most damaging is the myth that we can go it alone. Our culture celebrates self-sufficiency, but vulnerability requires support. The truth? Vulnerability isn't weakness. It's our most accurate measure of courage.
Shame thrives in silence and loses power when exposed. It's the painful belief that we are fundamentally flawed and unworthy of love, distinct from guilt's "I did something bad" versus shame's "I am bad." While guilt can inspire positive change, shame corrodes self-belief. Research links shame to addiction, depression, violence, and bullying, never to improvement. Shame manifests differently by gender. Women face pressure to achieve effortless perfection, while men must avoid appearing weak. Men typically respond to shame with anger or withdrawal. Body image issues often mask deeper worthiness concerns. College students revealed a telling disconnect. Women worried about physical flaws during intimacy, while men sought validation through sex. Both experienced shame, but misunderstood each other's vulnerabilities. Words in relationships can inflict lasting wounds, as shown by a woman devastated by her husband's body comment and a man hurt by his wife's dismissive "whatever." Women often express shame through criticism, while men respond with withdrawal or anger, creating a cycle of disconnection. True intimacy requires mutual vulnerability, the courage to be seen fully and respond with compassion.
Perfectionism isn't about healthy achievement. It's about avoiding shame. While many view it as a path to excellence, research shows it actually hampers success and correlates with depression, anxiety, addiction, and life paralysis. The key difference lies in motivation. Healthy striving asks, "How can I improve?" while perfectionism asks, "What will people think?" Many perfectionists developed this trait growing up in environments where worth was tied to achievement. Ironically, rather than protecting from shame, perfectionism breeds it. We're living in an era marked by addiction, medication, and obesity, all symptoms of our attempts to numb vulnerability. People turn to various outlets: substances, work, shopping, internet, or chronic busyness. This numbing extends beyond substances to information overload and constant distraction. The crucial problem is that emotional numbing is indiscriminate. When we block negative feelings, we also diminish our capacity for joy and happiness. Breaking free requires distinguishing between genuine comfort, which replenishes us, and numbing, which only offers temporary relief.
Those who manage anxiety effectively learn to set boundaries and cultivate meaningful connections instead of seeking quick fixes. Building shame resilience requires recognizing triggers, practicing critical awareness, reaching out for support, and speaking about shame. When we name what's happening and share it with someone who responds with empathy, shame begins to lose its grip. Women frequently turn shame into judgment of other women, like a drowning person pulling down another swimmer. Breaking free from perfectionism requires self-compassion, treating ourselves with the kindness we'd offer a good friend. The Japanese concept of wabi-sabi, finding beauty in imperfection, offers an alternative perspective. There's something compelling about the cracks in our lives. They're where the light enters, where our humanity shines through. Setting boundaries proves particularly challenging in our culture of scarcity. We feel pressure to be available 24/7, to say yes to every request. Yet boundaries are essential for wholehearted living. They define what's okay and what's not okay in our relationships. Building shame resilience also means understanding that vulnerability isn't weakness, but rather our most accurate measure of courage. It means recognizing that true connection requires risk, and that the alternative, staying safe but isolated, costs too much. By developing awareness of our shame triggers and practicing self-compassion when we feel exposed, we gradually build the resilience needed to live wholeheartedly. Rehumanizing workplaces requires leaders who embrace vulnerability for innovation. Fear of judgment, not lack of ideas, blocks creativity. Shame-based cultures manifest through blame, favoritism, comparison, and public criticism, organizational termites that erode trust. The blame game focuses on fault-finding rather than learning. True accountability emphasizes responsibility and growth, while blame centers on punishment. Transforming these patterns requires leaders willing to show uncertainty, admit mistakes, and welcome diverse views. In parenting, modeling matters more than teaching. When children see worthiness tied to achievement or appearance, they learn to earn love through performance. Breaking this cycle requires parents grounded in self-worth. Building shame resilience means separating the child from their behavior, accepting mistakes, and normalizing struggles. Most importantly, children need to feel loved for who they are, not what they achieve. Theodore Roosevelt's Man in the Arena speech emphasizes that credit belongs to those who enter the arena, who strive, err, and dare greatly, not to critics. This captures the essence of vulnerability, showing up and engaging fully despite risks. As a researcher studying connection, I initially resisted vulnerability until research revealed their inseparable link. This realization was a spiritual awakening. Vulnerability, though uncomfortable, was the gateway to everything meaningful. While I still struggle with criticism and self-protection, I've learned that avoiding vulnerability costs us joy, creativity, connection, and purpose. Daring greatly isn't about outcomes, but courage. In a culture focused on winners and losers, we forget that entering the arena is itself victory. Each choice of vulnerability over self-protection is meaningful, regardless of results. Like the Velveteen Rabbit becoming real through love, we become authentic not through perfection, but by allowing ourselves to be known. Wholehearted living emerges from embracing our imperfect, vulnerable humanity.